overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Have a beautiful week.
But isn't that a great question? How do you keep the music playing? If you've been in a 45-year marriage, you ask that question over and over again. How do you keep the music playing? And it gets sweeter because the answers come. All you have to do is ask the right question. And so today, I'm going to quote the question. That was what the poet Rilke said, quote the question. And any great teacher, I remember my teacher, Kennedy Schultz, was asked, well, what does that mean? And Kennedy would say, it doesn't matter what it means to me. It matters what it means to you. And when I heard that, I thought, wow, a little light bulb went off. What does it mean to you when I talk about these things up here on Sunday morning? Does it open your heart? Does it close your heart? Do you want to argue with me? Or does it create in you a fertile place of questioning? The reason that we court the question is because the mind is 10 times more active in the question than it is in an answer. So if someone, like if a well-meaning mother gives her kids all the answers, they're not going to discover their own truth. So what if a well-meaning mother would say, well, honey, what does that mean to you, that there's responsibility when I give you the keys to the car? You know? Does that mean that you drive carefully, that you don't speed down the street, that you don't drink and drive, and all those wonderful things that mothers would want their kids to reflect back to them from their own awareness? Or is it, I'm setting down the law here and you're going to follow it the way I think? You know, our religions have been that way, haven't they, in the past? These are the rules of the religion, and either you abide by the rules or you're going to burn in a place somewhere south of Arab. There's a hole that goes down there, I've been told. Or to realize that what sin came from was a Greek word meaning to miss the mark. It was an archery term. So what if sinning is just making a mistake? And living in hell is being unskillful about how we live our life? And when we're unconscious, we constantly create paths of suffering for ourselves because we're affirming a limited idea, and the law of the universe has only one word. What is that word, Seamus?
Yes.
It says yes. So if you say, my life sucks and all men are jerks, you're going to have a life that sucks and you're going to attract all these jerks into your world. And I knew a lady that did just that. But they can't hear that they're declaring this for themselves and they're creating it for themselves. So, living in the question, I don't know where I was going to go with this, with Rilke. Oh, while I was at the Sunrise Ranch, you meet wonderful people, synchronistically. And this woman sat down, she said, I'm reading the greatest book. She said, it's like a Bible to me, and it's called The Great Grace in Aging. So I wrote that book down, and it's Raul's 75th birthday today. You might want to give him a call. Anyway, so I bought this book for him, and I also bought one for myself. And I'm reading it with just, it's written by an elderly woman who is Buddhist. And she says, you come to a stage in your life when you've gone from middle age and you're in that last several chapters of your life. How do you want to live that part of your life? In a reactive place? In a constantly identifying with symptoms and diagnoses and telling doctors' reports? You know that death's an inevitability. Maybe you had a close call like I did with death. So then death's not something that you run away from anymore. But you actually need it on a daily basis. If I were to tell you that one of her practices to say every day that this is a good day to die, that it brings you more to life, because then every day becomes sacred. It's very counterintuitive. But she did a little poem at the beginning of the book that really spoke to my soul, by Wendell Berry. The poem said, geese appear high over us. They pass, and then the sky closes. Abandoned, as in love or sleep, it holds them to their way, clear in the ancient faith that what they need is already here. And we, We pray not for a new heaven and a new earth, but to be quiet in the heart and in the eye clear, because what we need is already here. So he's saying that the geese, who are, let's say, migrating to the south, don't they do that in the winter? That they know that there's something within their ancient being that moves them on their journey. And he says, could we pray too, not to change consciousness, like we do so much in religious science, not to change effect, but to have a quietness in our heart, an emptiness, a peace, a harmony in our heart, and our eye is clear to see things the way they are, not the way we want them to be, not the way we think they should be, but to see things actually as they are, because what we need is already here. Now that's science of mind in a nutshell. We do all our spiritual mind treatments in what tense? The present tense. We don't say in the future, someday it'll happen. We don't harbinger to the past, but we say right now, perfect health is the law of my life. Success is the law of my life. Love is the law of my life. Right now. And to the depth that I can know that and feel that, it begins to unfold and be reflected in my experience. So this beautiful author goes on to say, to arrive at what is already here, she says, we need intention and commitment and a practice that will enable the heart to be quiet and the eye to be clear. Now, one little sentence like that can change your life, because it says, what do we need? And there's the question. We need an intention. What if my intention is to show up in every moment and not abandon myself anymore? And so when in that moment comes up that little fearful boy, I'm not going to shit on him and say he should be confident and strong. I'm going to embrace that little fearful boy and bring the depth of my clarity and quiet heart to him or to her. So my intention is not to abandon anymore, and then to make a commitment. What if the commitment that we make is to be gentle with ourselves as we evolve, as we grow? And you know, my teacher said that's why there's the ow in growth. Growth sometimes hurts, because we have to evolve out of a way of being and living and thinking and doing into a more productive and life-affirming way on this planet. So have an intention, make a commitment, and then find a practice that works for you. Find a practice that works for you. Now, my practice has been gardening, because there's something in me that knows when I nurture something small and humble, I'm the one that benefits from that practice. And so that's where I do my prayers, intending these odd little plants. And you know, they always smile back at me in ways that you can't even imagine. And they're such great teachers, because they teach me about death. You know, plants die. And could I be okay with death? Could I just love them, know that they were here for whatever time they were, not blame myself for their death? But they died as they died. It was their karma, in a strange sort of way. You know, I have big trees that all of a sudden will die on me, and I'll say, what happened? It's not for me to figure out what happened. So back to the question. In the science of mind, they say the question is never how. The question is always what. Ooh, now that's nice, isn't it? It's always what. So when you figure out the what, when your intention is figure out the what, like a what for me was, how can I allow love to come to my aid? Well, then the universe will figure out the how. It may just be Teresa putting her arms around me when I walk into the church and holding her heart next to mine. That might be the how. I just have to know the what, that I'm open and receptive to love coming my way. If you don't like the word love, let's think of another word. How could I allow the presence of the universe to come to my aid? You know, every time there's a newborn baby in the center, every woman flocks to that baby, because they look into the eyes of that baby and there's not a somebody there. There's still this beautiful angelic presence that came from over the rainbow, wherever they come from, and they're looking in those eyes to remember what it was like to hold their own baby from that beautiful space before they came and identified with this earthly bond. So how could I let stillness come to my aid? You know, there's a beautiful line in the Bible, be still and know that I am God. So sometimes I find myself just chanting, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. And you know, just in singing that little chant, that little affirmation, I find that I'm courting the stillness. And in the stillness, there is no chaos. So while I was up on that mountain, they used the metaphor again of your mind is like a bull in a china shop. You know, the mind can be really, it can go on and on and on. But Emily, the mind can drive you nuts sometimes. And if it's in the china shop, well, then everything gets broken. But what they said is, take that same bull and put him in a vast open field. Wow. What if we're coming here, and Refuge Recovery is to create that field, that vast open space, we meditate before classes, so that we can know our true nature as that spacious vastness. And then when our bull surfaces, when our mind comes and it wants to snort and thing and steam things, it's got a great big field to roam in. Wow. So what if we come in here to create that vast space for each other? That emptiness. You know, there's a beautiful Buddhist concept called emptiness. And if you look into the concept of emptiness, it's the emptiness of the separate self. There is no me separate from you. And so the way Thich Nhat Hanh would say, if you look at a piece of paper, there is no paper there. There is the earth, there is the tree, there is the water, there is the sun, and it manifested in paper, but it's really so much greater. And what if you and I could know ourselves as that vast something, as spirit, as the ancestors? And the ancestors live in you and they incarnate, and when we do our healing work, the ancestors heal. So there's a Jewish phrase. What was the Jewish phrase that said, Jewish phrase, you are here to repair the world. This is a Mark Nepo phrase that he uses in this wonderful book. The Jewish phrase, you are here to repair the world. How do you repair the world? By repairing this world. And when you repair this world. So what if we could take responsibility for the only thing that we are really responsible for is our mind, our hearts, our bodies, our intentions as we go forward, our commitments. I love the people that have been coming here for so many years because that, you know, that like Jody, she said, I am so grateful I wake up in the morning and I'm going to a place that I want to go to because I'm committed to growing in this garden. I remember when I was in Atlanta and I was very young and I was messed up. You know, we really attract a lot of the people that are messed up. I had a PhD and I was messed up. And I would come and I'd sit in that back row and I would hear what I needed to hear, that I could take responsibility for this life that I've been given and I could start moving it in more proactive ways instead of reactive ways. That I could literally do a makeover on the inside, and when the makeover's on the inside, guess what? The outside begins to change. I am truly the most successful person I've ever met. I have more love in my life to go around. It's quantum. I mean, and I know it's all because I've committed to evolving and growing in that vast space that is my true nature, that's innocent and wants to play. Thank you, Pam, for doing your wonderful talk. So I came back from the mountain and I was given some pearls of great price. And I was sitting down with him because I spoke with someone who was on the mountain. He said, I don't remember a thing I heard. I find that's interesting. Oftentimes we don't remember. So I sat down with my little photographic memory and I said, what were the great pearls of great price? What were the what's, you know, that I heard? And then I get to ask a question. So what I heard up there was, first, you don't have to win the battle in life. You know, Trump said it's about winners and losers. No, it's not. It's not about winning the battle. They said it's about getting off the battlefield. Wow. What if I'm not going to fight? I'm not going to be on the battlefield with you anymore. I respect your opinion. If you want to say all Muslims are rapists and killers, that's not what I think, because I've been to Turkey and I've seen how lovely they are. But we're not going to meet in conclusions. We're not going to be on the battlefield anymore. And so you can think what you want to think and I can think what I'm going to think. And so what would be the question? How can I not engage in the battle and step off the battlefield? And where are those battlefields? Sometimes they're right in your own family. I know of my family is similar. You know, my evangelical sister has preached to me many times the error of my ways. And so I choose not to meet with her on the battlefield. You know, Mark Nepo was talking about in Africa, they don't see the idea of you and me as separate human beings. He said, in Africa, there is no word for an orphan because there is this deep belief that's held within the African people that if a child loses its parents, it becomes all our children. So what if we could just shift from the me to the we in that? Then the battlefield would seem kind of fruitless, wouldn't it? That we don't need to battle. We need to come together in detente in that heart space. I was doing the yoga nidra one morning up on the mountain where you lie in this deep silence. And she asked the question, what does your heart ache for? What does your heart yearn for? And I heard my heart speak to me. My heart yearns for deep intimacy. And I don't even know what that means. And then when we came out of the yoga nidra, we were paired up with a total stranger. And when this woman spoke to me, she opened her heart so deep that it was the most intimate sharing from her heart. And all I could do was cry because I was manifesting intimacy with a total stranger who was sharing the depth of her pain. So what if you're going to get what you ask for? So be careful what you ask for, because it might take you off the battlefield and into this field of love. The second thing that I heard very clearly was that the head, our mind, wants to be free from the torment of the mind. It doesn't want to struggle. It doesn't want thoughts that it can't endure. But the heart, Susan, the heart wants to be free within all that stuff. So the heart's going to take you through grief. The heart's going to take you through a mind that's in judgment, and yet to know that the heart can move through it with a more skillful way than the head could ever. Because the head wants to justify, judge, make some wrong and some right, but the heart says, I'm going to know that you're free in the midst of all of it, in the midst of the pain. The third thing I got, and I've shared with you before, is about the bull in the china shop. Could we court the vastness that's always there? That's why when you do your meditation, it's to just rest in that space that holds everything. The metaphor I like to use is Locke Kelly said, you've imagined yourself as this big fluffy cloud, separate from all the other clouds in the sky, and your job is to make that cloud the whitest and fluffiest of clouds in the sky, and then one day you fall out of the cloud and you go, oh my God, I'm the sky. I am this vast space in which the cloud appears. The cloud is impermanent. It will come and it will go, but the sky is eternal. And that is our true nature. Could we know ourselves as the sky instead of the cloud? Just a thought. The third is meditation. And they made something very clear to me, that meditation isn't something we do to achieve a quiet mind. That's the illusion. That's what we've been told. They likened meditation as a way of life. And meditation, they said, is a fascination with the present moment, with a deep curiosity as to what's arising within me. So it might be that little fearful self that's coming up in my meditation. Could I not abandon that fearful self, but be present with it? Because everything that is coming up in us, when we call it forth, is there for us. Rumi said this being human is like a guest house, and come knocking at the door of the guest house are the fearful parts and the worried parts and the guilty parts and the grieving parts. It's not to get rid of them. It's not to have emptiness and not them. They're parts of ourself. He says, invite them all in. I would say into your heart. They may be coming to clean your house out. Wow. So why would you want to abandon them? And that's the fifth thing I learned there. The thing that they said the most was, stop abandoning yourself. Stop abandoning yourself. A beautiful woman shared with me that she drew an I Ching card or something like that, and the card said something about loving themselves. And the Native American that I met from the Crow tribe, he said, I've been witnessing you talking all week up here on the mountain about loving the allness of ourself. And he says, in my tribe, they say, when you put your attention on something with love and devotion, you've made that very thing sacred. So what if we could make our own little self sacred? It's the life that we've been given. May not be much by the world standards, but it's your life and it's my life. And could we make this thing sacred? Huh? And not abandon it anymore. And so when those little rejected parts of ourself come knocking at the door of your consciousness, could we be playful enough to say, come on in? You know, there's a little worried Walter and fearful Freddie and critical Curtis and judgmental George. We all have them. You know, I say we all have an inner bitch. You know, she's been there to protect you. Take on the world. You invite her in. She's probably the chairman of the board. And once she's loved and seen and heard, she no longer operates subversively, but she says, I'm here for you. Then you're an integrated being. You're a whole being with all the rejected parts of yourself integrated. And you know what happens then? Then you can embrace the world. You want to know how to embrace the world? There's a great question. Embrace the world within you. And there's back to the Jewish saying, you're here to heal the world, one heart at a time. So let's just go within. Karen Drucker wrote a beautiful song, We Can Change the World One Heart at a Time. And we do that through our intention, by choosing a heart that's opened. Or as the poet Wendell Berry said, a heart that's quiet and an eye that is clear. I can see clearly now because I've gotten out of the cloud of my belief systems and I'm looking through the sky of oneness. And I'm seeing that we're all the same. Your cloud might be a little bigger than my cloud. Your cloud might be a little darker than my cloud. But when we let go of our nature as separate clouds, we can then literally embrace each other in this vastness of the one heart that contains us all. And we can be free within that heart, within whatever life brings us. It might be grief one day. It might be sadness another. Might be worry another. But the heart is free within that emotion, no longer abandoning it, no longer rejecting it, but free. A freedom that's already here. Wow. So we pause for a while, and we feel that freedom. And as we feel it, it's real. It's always been there, waiting for our recognition. So what if all we're doing is recognizing the presence, not only outside of us, but within us, the same presence, which unveils itself, which unhides itself when we're ready. And sometimes it takes a major something for it to wake up. But maybe today is that major something. Huh? And we can smile. So put your hands on your heart. And say, I am here for you. I allow you to assist me as I go through life, coming to my aid in sweet, precious moments that are always happening. Thank you, beloved. Thank you, beloved. And so it is. Bless you. Will the ushers come forward? Serena, welcome home. It's so nice to have you back. So take your offering in your hand if you have an offering. If not, put your hand on your heart and say with me, divine love consecrates my gift. It goes forth to heal, to bless, and to prosper. It returns to me multiplied abundantly. And I am prospered. So thank you.
My senses like a night in the forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses. Come fill me again. Come let me love you. Let me give my life to you. Let me drown in your laughter. Let me die in your arms. Let me lay down beside you. Let me always be with you. Come let me love you. Come love me again. Come a storm in a desert, like a sleepy ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again. Let's make a circle.
Podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.